In this module, we're going to wrap up our look at prenatal epigenetic influences by considering the effects of how much nutrition our breeding dogs get, their physical condition and fitness, how the puppies are born, and many kinds of toxins that bitches can come in contact with. In addition to understanding the quality of nutrition, we also need to think about the quantity. Let's turn briefly to a dog's ancestors' access to food and the possible epigenetic effects on puppies. Much of this work has come from the Dutch famine studies, which focus on the winter of 1944 when the Germans blockaded the Western Netherlands, starving the population. Sadly, more than 20,000 people died while the population attempted to survive on 30% of its needed calories. Scientists have followed the children that survived the Dutch famine, as well as their children and grandchildren. The results have been fascinating yet complex. What they tell us more than anything is that environmental challenges not only affect us and our dogs, but they change how genes are expressed. These changes are passed on to future generations. I first heard about this when I went to a talk by Dr. David Meach, a leading wolf expert. Dr. Meach was presenting on wolf nutrition, and during his talk he said, "If I see an elk pulled down by a lone wolf, I know that elk's grandmother suffered starvation." I was stunned, but I also hadn't heard about epigenetics yet. So you know now more than I did then, and thus probably aren't as surprised by this as I was. Not so much that the wolf could pull the elk down, but that Dr. Meach could identify what happened two generations ago in the elk herd to have allowed that to happen. So if we now apply this to our dogs, it's not just what our dogs eat, it's how much. Starvation, or an overabundance of nutrition, can result in epigenetic changes for generations. In many places today, our dogs are fat. This includes our breeding animals and show dogs. A British study found that nearly 20% of show dogs had a body condition score greater than 5, and another study identified over 25% of dogs showing at Crufts were overweight. The Labrador Retriever Club in the United States felt the need to send a letter to licensed AKC judges, reminding them that, quote, "Labrador retrievers shall be shown in working condition, well-muscled, and without excess fat," unquote. So what might be the impact of being overweight? Well, let's compare it to starvation. In the Dutch famine studies, men who suffered starvation before puberty had grandsons that lived many years longer than other men and had less heart disease, while men whose grandfathers hadn't reached adolescence during times of plenty had shorter lives and were more likely to have diabetes. For men, famine prior to adolescence might not be fun, but it's more beneficial to descendants than living in a time of plenty. This is not the same in women. Women who were in the womb or newborn during a famine produced grandchildren with higher rates of diabetes, obesity, and schizophrenia. Scientists think somehow that eggs are coded around the time that they are created, setting the body up to expect a specific kind of environment. So eggs created in a time of famine produce organisms that expect famine. If they're then born into a super Walmart world like ours, they become obese and diabetic. Isn't it interesting that somehow the DNA knows if it was inherited from a father or grandfather, or a mother or grandmother? So what does that mean for us? First, we have to understand that bad epigenetic effects differ by the sex of both parent and offspring. As we collect data and monitor our dogs, we need to recognize that fathers' and grandfathers' lives may affect male descendants differently than females, and the same with mothers and grandmothers. More importantly, we have to recognize that there are three particularly important periods when the nutritional aspects of epigenetic influences seem to have the greatest impact. The first is in utero, during pregnancy. The second is just prior to breeding. For males, that's during spermatogenesis, which is the 2 months prior to breeding. For bitches, it's at least when they come in season until they are bred. And finally, it's during the slow growth period. Let's take a look at when this is in our dogs. The slow growth period is just before adolescence, when growth slows and the body fat increases. The timing of this varies by breed, sex, and adult size. During this period, the environment has a larger than normal impact on puppies. So these are the growth curves of dogs of various sizes. Here we have body weight, and here we have age in weeks across the x-axis. And we can see these rapid growth rates early in puppyhood, and then we see a slowing and a leveling out as the dogs reach adulthood. If we now put sizes against the curves, we can see that giant breed puppies are in the slow growth period, where the rate of growth changes and slows down significantly, and that takes place between 43 and 61 weeks. Large breed puppies like Labradors and Goldens are likely to be in the slow growth period around week 28, and it continues to about 43. Medium breeds like Spaniels are going to be in the slow growth period from 20 to 31 weeks, and our toy dogs are still in puppyhood when their growth slows from 10 to 20 weeks. Although the slow growth period is a wonderful time for us and our puppies, these are not usually the periods that we're focusing on future generations, but it sure looks like we should be. The amount of food that dogs get directly affects their physical condition and their puppies. Let's start with the boys. From research in people and other species, unfit males are more likely to be infertile, have lower sperm counts and quality, usually have a harder time physically handling a breeding, and are more likely to produce obese offspring due to epigenetic changes in the sperm, and these changes are reversible with weight loss. Males that are too thin have lower sperm concentration and fewer overall sperm, but no apparent epigenetic changes in the sperm themselves. Now let's take a look at the girls. Dams that are underweight during pregnancy ovulate fewer eggs, produce fewer puppies from those eggs, and often have too little milk for the pups. Overweight dams also have lower conception rates, and they have higher rates of dystocia or whelping problems. And just right dams tend to whelp more quickly. Their pups have less risk of hypoxia or oxygen deprivation. Fewer of those pups die at birth or soon thereafter. And pups of just right dams usually have ideal birth weights, which we would consider to be average for the breed, and tend to decrease whelping problems. But how do we know if a dog's condition is just right? Well, the Purina body condition system is one way. Breeding animals should be a 5 on this 9-point scale, and that says ribs palpable without excess fat covering, waist observed behind the ribs when viewed from above, abdomen tucked up when viewed from the side. For a dog that competes in performance events, this might require putting weight on him or her. For those that show in confirmation, this might require taking weight off. Knowing how to check weight matters too. Most people just feel the middle of the dog's rib cage, but that's not going to give you an accurate picture of your dog's condition. So if we take a look at a dog, can you see this diagonal line right up the rib cage there? That's the latissimus dorsi, an important muscle for dogs' movement. And if we simply feel over the top of it, right about here, we aren't really going to get an accurate picture of the dog's condition. So if we want to really check weight, we need to do so behind the muscle back on the floating ribs. But more than weight, breeding bitches also need to be physically fit. In humans and horses, moms that had good physical condition during pregnancy experienced shorter second stage labor, had lower rates of cesarean sections, fewer premature births, less acute fetal stress in newborns and lower fetal heart rates, lower maternal blood pressure and heart rates, reduced gestational diabetes, and holy cow, a 30 to 50% lower risk of neural tube defects in physically active women, even those that did not use folate supplements compared to those that were inactive. Now, few animals have been formally exercised to study the effects on reproduction, except for mice and horses. Voluntary activity during pregnancy improved brain plasticity and development in the offspring, resulted in long-term glucose homeostasis in the kids, optimal blood sugar, and provides long-lasting protection from neurodegeneration when they are adults. However, forced exercise has detrimental impacts on pregnancy outcomes and fetuses, so we need to make sure that our dogs are doing something that they enjoy at a level that they feel comfortable with. Our challenge in dogs is that there's been no clear guidance regarding appropriate exercise for stud dogs and brood bitches. To fix this, we've partnered with Dr. Chris Zink, one of the leading veterinarians in canine sports medicine and rehabilitation, to design Fit to be Tied, a breeding stock conditioning program. The program is designed and it's already being implemented. We're doing research into its effectiveness that began in the spring of 2016, so hopefully we'll have preliminary results in early 2017. Stay tuned for more information about this program or attend one of our Fit to be Tied seminars to learn more. How puppies are born matters too. Although we never hesitate to use cesarean sections when needed to protect the health of our dogs and try to save puppies, we also never forget the attendant risks to this surgery. First off, cesarean sections may have greater risks to the bitch than vaginal deliveries, up to and sadly including death. Very few bitches die during natural births. Today, improved anesthetics have also reduced deaths from C-sections, but they still occur. Orphaned puppies raised by people experience a much more deprived rearing, even with the best care we can give them, than those reared by dog moms. In addition, we know that dams that experience C-sections take longer to start mothering their puppies, often up to 48 hours longer. We'll talk in the next module about the importance of mothering, but for now, trust me, it has a critical impact on puppies' short and long-term well-being. One thing you can do to reduce this mothering delay is to ask your vet to soak towels in amniotic fluid during the surgery. After your mom and pups are home, rub the damp towels all over the puppies and encourage her to lick them clean. In many species, amniotic fluids help bond mother to young, along with her changing hormone levels and genital stimulation. Recent research into people and mice shows significantly different microbiomes in vaginally delivered babies versus those born by C-section. Babies acquired much of these important bacterial communities during the birth process. Those born vaginally have microbiomes that resemble their mom's vaginal microflora, while C-section babies harbored those found on their mother's skin, dominated by bacteria like Staphylococcus. This is true in mice, where pups are usually born in the amniotic sac, as well as human babies, who are usually not. So there's no reason to not expect that it also will apply to dogs. As we discussed earlier, the microbiome influences many aspects of the puppy, including its immune and digestive systems and rates of allergy and cancer. We don't know the long-term impact of babies being colonized by skin bacteria, but researchers are pursuing this line of study, so hopefully we'll have more details soon. There's a growing body of research investigating chronic health issues in people born via C-sections. These folks have double the obesity rate and much higher allergy and leukemia rates than the general population. Given the growing incidence of obesity, allergies, and cancer in our dogs, this is something we need to follow more closely in our own breeding programs. Finally, babies born by cesarean section experience changes to the DNA in their white blood cells, which could be connected to altered stress levels during this method of delivery. When babies are delivered by C-section, they're unprepared for birth and can become more stressed after the delivery than before. This is very different than a normal vaginal delivery, where the stress gradually builds up before the actual birth, helping the baby to start breathing and quickly adapt to its new environment outside the womb. So use C-sections judiciously, with full recognition that there may be long-term costs to this procedure. And then our last concern during pregnancy is exposure to toxin. We simply can't keep our dog moms wrapped away from all toxins, but we can be thoughtful about those we use. In many places, flea and tick control is essential. However, which products we use can make a big difference to puppies. There are a number of long-standing products that have been tested safe on pregnant and nursing bitches. Those are the only ones you should use. How do you know? We've put a list from the pet education site run by Drs. Foster and Smith in the additional resource section. Several research studies from Tufts, Purdue, and North Carolina State Universities indicate that many dogs are exposed to lawn chemicals, and that exposure can increase cancer rates, especially among predisposed breeds. We don't know the effect of maternal exposure prior to birth in dogs, but in other species, it not only affects long-term health, but it also impairs growth and neurodevelopment in the offspring. As best you can, keep your pregnant moms from contact with any herbicide or pesticide. The old-fashioned practice of vaccinating all pregnant bitches to boost her immunity has been overturned. In the recent World Small Animal Veterinary Association vaccine guidelines, which you'll find in the additional resource section, the authors clearly state, vaccines should not be given during pregnancy unless specifically indicated in the vaccine data sheet. The best approach is to ensure that breeding bitches are vaccinated with core vaccines, but it is unnecessary to give additional core vaccines to breeding bitches immediately before pregnancy. Their standard vaccination schedule will provide adequate protective immunity and colostral antibodies for the puppy. Vaccination with modified live vaccines and killed products during pregnancy should be avoided. The only exception to this protocol is the herpes vaccine, which is intended to be used during pregnancy, but is not available in North America. Internal parasite control is also critical to puppy health and survival, so worming medications often need to be given, but again, we should only use those tested safe on pregnant and lactating bitches, and you'll find that list in the additional resources. Now for a controversial subject, prenatal x-rays in dogs. Many breeders do them, many vets recommend them, yet there is no research showing they are safe. I'm not going to belabor the point here because I've presented my argument for the necessity of safety research in a three-part blog that you'll find in the additional resource section. Hopefully you're going to spend some time in the resources. We also need to be concerned about the effects of secondhand smoke on breeding dogs and puppies. In people, we know that exposure increases the likelihood of stillbirths by nearly 25%, as well as low birth weights and higher rates of birth defects. If a pregnant mom might be around secondhand smoke, be sure to take steps to reduce her exposure. Finally, just like in people, prescription and over-the-counter medications can have unexpected toxic effects on fetal puppies. Drugs that we would normally reach for, such as Pepto-Bismol or Benadryl, should never be given casually or without veterinary guidance to pregnant dogs. So check and double-check with your vet, with the manufacturer, before giving any drug to a pregnant dog. Wow, we covered a lot of ground in Module 3, and our puppies aren't even born yet. As you can see, the prenatal period may be short in dogs, but it's really, really important. There are many things that influence our puppy's lifetime health and temperament prior to birth. Some are obvious, some are pretty subtle. So here are four key takeaways from the prenatal period. First, the role of nutrition, both quality and quantity, prior to and during pregnancy can't be overstated. Second, breeding stock selection remains very important, as it has been to dog breeders for centuries. But the care those dogs receive is as important, because we now know epigenetics is as powerful as genetics.